Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Behind Massive Screens, a game development podcast here from Massive Entertainment. I'm here with Rasmus. But before I introduce him properly, I'm just going to do this podcast stuff. If you're listening on like Apple Podcasts or even Spotify these days, and you like what we do, please rate and review us. It's a podcast version of smash that like button. Please. It really helps to spread the word. So thank you very much. With that out of the way, hi, Rasmus.
Hello.
So Rasmus Bjork, technical animator here at Massive Entertainment. And I'm glad to find out more about a subject that I don't know very much about.
Well, I don't think a lot of people do, to be honest.
So maybe we should start there then.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a technical animator, and I'm basically in charge of making sure that characters, creatures, objects, vehicles, weapons move the way that they're supposed to do in video games. And here at Massive, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's why, like, you know what an animator does, basically. But it's just, the thing that tripped me up is the tech part.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Why would you say it's called tech animation?
Well, because we're basically in charge of making sure that the technical parts of the animation work. So what I do is... I make sure that a character has a skeleton, pretty much,
right,
that the animators can then manipulate to make it move the way they want it to move and the way it's supposed to move. Right. And that's where the technical part comes in, because as most people would know, a human is very complex. There's a lot of moving parts. Like there's skeleton, there's muscles, there's tendons. Think about to make a character or a human or a creature move in a realistic fashion.
Right.
And that's where we come in. Like we make sure to make that happen for everything that most of everything that needs to have movement. Organic things in particular, but also some mechanical stuff.
Right.
I think that's...
That's a good explanation. Yeah, I think I understand so. A little bit more now. So, but how... the first question... That's the first question I was asked. But the second question is, how did you end up at Massive Entertainment? How did you go to become a technical animator?
I started my journey a long time ago. I decided that I wanted to be a game developer, like, when I was, I think, 17 or 18, something like that. But it's hard to become a game developer because there's a very high skill ceiling,
right,
to get into a company.
What was it? Sorry, jumping in. What was it that made you decide? Was there any moment you're like playing a game and I want to do this? Or was it just a general thing? Just curious.
Well, I mean, I don't really know what kind of sparked it. I think I've always been very creative, and I like thinking about things,
right.
Like fantasizing about things.
Yeah.
And video games has always been, and I think it is for most people, like an escape from not necessarily reality, but it's a form of entertainment that is like on a whole different level than other entertainments. And that always kind of drew me in. And I think, I don't really know what it was that sparked it really, but it was either go into game development or going into medicine.
That's quite the difference.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know. It was just one of those spur of the moment things, I think. I was probably playing, I don't know, maybe The Elder Scrolls Oblivion or something like that. Because I remember doing that a lot when I was younger. I think it was just like, maybe I should just apply to one of these, see if there are any video game educations like here in Sweden. And I found one. I found two, actually.
Which ones?
There was a civil engineering program that started in Karlskrona, like right about the time when I was started thinking about applying to universities and such. That's kind of the route I went. Like, so I applied, I got in, and then I realized there is a lot of programming in civil engineering. which didn't really fit me. I dropped out after a year, and I found another education, which was in the same school. So the school is called Blekinge Institute of Technology, Blekinge Tekniska Högskola for those of us in Sweden. And they had like they had three different locations: so Karlskrona, Ronneby, and Karlshamn.
Quick aside, Ronneby is actually the place where Massive Entertainment was founded.
Exactly.
In 97.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. But so apparently that location closed down because there was a school there called School of Future Entertainment, I think it was.
Oh, I remember that school. It was super hip.
Yeah, it was. It was.
It was the coolest school in Sweden at the time.
Yeah. But they closed down. So
that's sad.
Yeah,
I actually didn't know. I hadn't thought about them in years. Like, wait, I remember that name.
Yeah,
they had like their campus was an old prison or something, right?
I don't actually know because I never went there because they closed down.
Fair enough. I'm dating myself here now.
But yeah, so I started an education in Karlshamn, and I have a Bachelor of Science degree from there. I don't really remember, like, I think it's like Bachelor of Science in Media Technology or something like that, which it looks really, really good on paper, but it's kind of useless.
Stay in school. Yeah. Stay in school, kid. Don't listen to us. Stay in school. Anyway.
Well, it's useless in the sense that it didn't get me a job.
Right.
At least not in video games. So from there, I kind of went abroad for a while. I was a video game tester in Canada for like 2 years. I moved like across the world to New Zealand for a while. And then when I came back, I applied here to a school in Malmö called the Game Assembly.
Yep.
Which I think you've talked about before.
Oh, yeah, the Game Assembly tends to pop up from time to time.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here from at Massive from Game Assembly.
Yep.
And that's kind of the route I went. So I first started there because they have a few different programs. So the one that I started out doing was Game Art, I think it's called. I did that for a year, and then they opened another one, which is Technical Art, or it's still there. And I did that for a year, and then I applied for an internship here at Massive. I got it, and now I'm here.
Here we go. How long have you been here?
Let's see. I think I started my internship September 2018, and I got hired in end of January 2019.
Well, there we go.
So I've been here a while.
Yeah. So let's jump straight into the actual tech animation part. I think we should start at the beginning. So where does it start? Where does the job on a character start?
Mm-hmm. Well, it starts with the character art.
Right.
And once they're done with a character, they send it to us. And we create a skeleton for that character. So let's say you get a human. And then you need to make sure that you create a skeleton which is comprised of joints, and each of these joints is like a point in space, in 3D space. And you usually start out with like the basic stuff. So like you want a shoulder joint, you want a hip joint, an elbow joint, etc. So like you get all the major parts done. And once you're done with that, you bind that skeleton to the character mesh. The mesh is like that's the part that makes up the character. It's basically just a shell of planes, pretty much. And a plane is just like, it's a surface. It's a surface with no thickness. It's just a plane. There's nothing. Yeah. Once you bind that, you need to do skinning.
And the
skinning part is where you apply weights from these different joints to paint. You paint the mesh. You paint a surface to make sure that it moves and behaves the way that you want it to behave. So, like in terms of a human, you want when the shoulder joint moves and rotates and bends, the shoulder and upper arm follows. Same thing for the elbow joint. You want the forearm to follow, and for the hand joint, etc. And that's what skinning is. Like you make it look and behave the same way that a human would do. In the case of a human character, of course.
Right. When you mentioned weight, you add weight to that plane.
Exactly. So for weighting, it's and this is skin weighting. Every point on the surface of a character mesh needs to get information from the skeleton to understand what am I supposed to do in relation to the skeleton.
Right.
What is my job when the elbow rotates? What is my job when the spine rotates or moves or whatever? And the weighting part is then just like you basically paint a value on the mesh saying if, for example, like the elbow joint moves, you want the part of the mesh that is on the elbow to move with it to a value of, let's say, 50%. And then the other part will move 50% relative to the shoulder joint, for example. It's kind of hard to put in words because it's kind of like a very visual thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. And this is just for a human. Basically, now what you've gone through with all of that is the movement of an arm. And that sounds complicated enough. And then you get, like, how do you make sure that, like, the upper body and the lower body moves in relationship to anything else? Like, does this weighting just keep going all the way until you have the entire character?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a process. And basically what we usually do is we start out with a base mesh, which is like it's the basic shape and form of what the character proportions are. And that's where you build like you can build the detail into it from the start, and then you can copy that over to different characters to make sure that they all move and behave correctly. Because if you need to do it from the ground up for every single character, it's a humongous amount of work.
Yeah, sure.
So you really need to make sure that you have a good baseline before you start like creating more characters.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to get swamped and you're never going to be done with the work.
Sure. So those are humans, and still this is obviously a very deep and complex topic in itself. And as you said early on in the beginning, that skeletons and human movement is very complicated in itself. I think it's interesting you were going to medicine and now you're working on skeletons. It's kind of funny. Is that just in my head that's funny?
No, not really, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to go into medicine was because I am interested in biology and anatomy as well, so I think it kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah,
now that I think about it.
Yeah, it does. So okay, humans, insanely complicated just to get them to, because uncanny valley, right? You see something and something's off and you directly like, people don't move it like that, even though it might be in video games like exaggerated, whatever, it's still you notice. But then applying this to something that's not human, like a fantasy creature or whatever, how do you approach that? Like you get the character arts creature, say.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work on that? Because that doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, you use a lot of references.
Right.
So, I mean, let's say you get a lizard creature or something, or maybe a bird creature, whatever it may be. It might not be a bird necessarily. It might not be a lizard necessarily. But your reference for it would be something in the real world, which could be a lizard. So yeah. You look at geckos, you look at Komodo dragons, you look at whatever creature you can find that is kind of similar.
Yeah.
And you use that as your baseline for what the joint placement would be.
Right.
Because it would be different for a bird compared to a lizard. Even though I guess they're kind of the same, same ancestry, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, so that's where you go first. And then it's a process of creating something and then iterating on it, getting feedback from character art, from animation, from directors, from art directors, from animation directors, from creative directors. And then you return to it, do it all over again until you hit that sweet spot, send it back. And then once it's gone back and forth, depending on how good you are at your job, it could be one or two times, or it might be 10 times.
Right.
Right? And like the object and the idea of what the creature is supposed to be could change as well during that process. So you have to always be able to go back and iterate on it.
Yeah.
To hit that sweet spot that everybody might not like, but they might just not disagree on it.
Right. I think, because just looking at video games in general and looking back, like, animals in themselves seem really complicated to get right. Mm-hmm. There's so many times you've seen, like, horses seem to be one of those things, since they pop up in a lot of video games. Like, if something's off, I had a friend who is really into horseback riding, and she owns like 3 horses. I don't understand how it works, but she does. And I remember playing video games with her and just getting like criticism against the horses. I remember texting her like, this video game is really good, and getting back like, but the horses don't move. She was counting like, oh yeah, the legs are not moving as they should. Yeah. And you're looking at cats and dogs and stuff in games as well. Like, if anything is just slightly off, then you notice right away, even though you're not actually a horse.
Yeah, and that's where the hard part of our job is. I think in general, like, just for character art, for animation, and for us in technical animation, and also to some extent technical art, because that's kind of the difference between video games and movies. Because in movies, you just need that one perfect shot, right?
Yeah.
So you can focus on getting everything to look really, really good for that one specific shot. But in video games, everything is in motion all the time.
Yeah.
And for us who are like, for, let's take Division as an example, it's a third person game, and you can rotate the camera around.
Yeah.
You can see every single part of the character. So it's really important to strike a balance between what's going to work for the whole character, and just not focus on that one specific thing, like taking a holistic view to the whole character, and also keeping in mind the technical limitations of the engine, to make sure that we can throw in, I don't know, 20 characters on screen at the same time with the same amount of joints and skin weighting, and make sure that works. But on the topic of creatures and horses in particular, Red Dead Redemption 2 has really, really great horse deformation.
Well, considering the time they spent on making that game, you better hope so.
Yeah.
I got to text her after this and ask. She's played it. One thing that just popped into my mind as well when it comes to fantasy, and because you talked about Oblivion before,
mm-hmm.
What do you think would be the easiest, like, when rigging a character like that, or creating the skeleton, like a fantasy, say a fantasy, if you can play an orc, like nobody knows in real life what an orc looks like. Mm. But do you think it would be easier to create a skeleton based on that than a human? Is it easier or is it more complicated since you don't have an actual reference about, say, what an orc moves like?
It would depend on the art style. I think that's the biggest thing. Because for us, we're, I think Ubisoft in general is creating kind of realistic looking games. Mm-hmm. With a few exceptions, of course, sure. but generally realistic looking games.
Realistic rabbits.
Yeah, that would be something to see.
Anyway.
But I think creating realistic looking characters is harder than creating creatures that aren't or characters that aren't supposed to be realistic looking, just because of the human eye. Like, you can spot that something isn't right with one of these, I don't know, Japanese robot looking things from a mile away, right? Just because it doesn't have the same, it just doesn't look right, you know? Yeah. And it's the same thing in video games. Like, you can spot immediately if it's a video game, or generally if it's a CGI like movie or cutscene or whatever. I think the one exception I think to this would be the technology that they're using for Disney, like the Disney Plus shows, like Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian. They're using some really, really good software to create like realistic looking faces.
Yeah.
Now the term slipped my mind, but like they did for, and spoiler alert here if anyone hasn't seen The Mandalorian,
pause now, jump forward 30 seconds if you don't want that spoiler.
Luke Skywalker,
right?
Yeah. And in The Mandalorian, it was, you could tell that it wasn't him just because of the way that they used the technology.
Sure.
But also because we all know that that actor is not that age anymore.
Right.
So you know immediately that something's off just based off of that. But in Book of Boba, that character is also in there. It looks insanely good.
Yep. Agreed.
I think for live action, it's a lot easier to get to that level of fidelity,
mm-hmm.
and not have that uncanny valley look anymore.
Right.
And I think they kind of showed it also with some of the Marvel movies. I think there's a scene in Captain America: Civil War where they de-age Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
In one of the scenes in the beginning, and that also looks really, really good. Yeah. But those are big budget movie productions that have specific studios dedicated only to making that one perfect thing, while we have like maybe 200 employees working on a video game at times. And out of those 200, there might be 5 dedicated to all of the characters making them look and act realistically.
Yeah. And within the limitations of a game.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
I accidentally said the word rigging, and that's on our list of topics as well.
Yeah.
If we should go in a little bit of what that is, because it's, again, it's one of those terms you hear so much,
mm-hmm.
Rigging a character. So what does that mean?
So rigging is, depending on who you talk to, because like I use them interchangeably, the terms rigging and skinning and setting up a skeleton.
Right.
Usually I say rigging for the whole process, but rigging
is a catch-all phrase for,
exactly, yeah, for my job pretty much. But so rigging, if you go into the specifics of what rigging actually is to create the controls for the animators to use, so that they can move the character the way that it's supposed to be moved.
Right.
And this depends on partly if you're going for a realistic kind of character look, or if you're going for a more cartoony, less realistic look.
Right.
Because there's a lot of different tools that we can use to, that we can give to the animators to make sure that they get the most out of the rig,
mm-hmm.
which is what they're using, and put limitations on what they can do as well.
Yeah. I really like, before we started recording, mm-hmm. I have to bring this up because I really like the analogy when it comes to the relationship between character art and the, because we talked about the animators
sure.
now, the relationship between character art.
Mm.
First of all, if you are interested in character art, then go to the, what was called at the time, the Fika Sessions podcast, which is just scroll down the feed and listen to episode 4 with Ocean Nestrom about character art, because it's really interesting. But you have character art, and then you have the animators, and in between. Like, that analogy you gave me, I love that when it comes to creating
yeah.
a character.
Yeah, so the analogy that I used was, and this is the one that I use when I talk to like my mom's friends or older people who don't really know what I do, and I want to explain it. Sorry.
Or me.
Or you, yeah. Or like if I just want to explain to someone who has no idea what I do, but in simple terms, and it's I'm using Pinocchio, right? Because Pinocchio is a string puppet, and the way that it works is that the character art team creates the puppet. They create the legs, they create the little hat, the little nose, all of that, and the animators are the ones that are using those. Like they're manipulating the strings, right?
Yep.
With those wooden crosses or whatever. And tech animation, we're the guys who make the strings.
Right.
That's my job. And
yep.
I make sure that the strings are attached to the wooden crosses and the different leg parts or the joints that are supposed to move.
That's my job. That's rigging, essentially.
Yeah, I'm the string guy.
Yeah. That's a good... But how does this fit into... the entire creation of the pipeline of creating the game? Where do you guys fit in, and how do you work with other teams? How does everything come together? Because sure, we can create these characters, but they're still in a video game. So like, how at the end there's a product.
Mm.
How does the pipeline look? How does the road towards launch, so to speak, look?
Yeah. Okay. So we're still talking about characters, so I'll use that as an example. So it would first be concept art, right? They're going to be making a character concept, which they're going to send to character art once it's approved. And character art, they're going to create the actual character with the meshes. And this could be different depending on what kind of character it is. So if it's a hero character, it's going to be very specific, and it's going to be a lot more detailed than a lower tier character, so like an NPC you just see out in the world. And then once that's approved, what they're doing, they're going to send it to us to set up the skeleton and do all the rigging and all the skinning. And once that's done, we're going to send it off to the animators. And this is kind of where the iterative process kind of starts. Like, it starts a little bit earlier, but for the most part, this is where it happens, because our character art team is pretty good. So we usually don't have to do a lot of back and forth,
right.
But sometimes we do. And then once the animators get a hold of it, they're going to start doing their animations, applying them, and they're going to figure out where all the issues are. Like, we can't move this, we need to move this. And then they'll send it back to us, and we'll fix the stuff that they want fixed, and they send it back, and that's kind of how it goes generally. Sometimes, like I said, we have to send it back to character art when they've done stuff that we're like, oh, this doesn't look good, this isn't going to work for our purposes,
right.
And we can see that usually pretty early on, and they'll have to redo it, and then send it back to us, and then we'll go, okay, this is fine. Hopefully after the first try.
Right. Yeah, because you mentioned before, there's a lot of stakeholders involved in all steps. Like.
Yeah, exactly. So there's at least 3 different departments involved or that I'm usually involved with. So for me, it would be my own department, technical animation, and then it would be character art, which is like sometimes they can do more things than just character arts. Like they can create weapons and different props and stuff like that as well. And then the animation team, and occasionally the tech art team as well. Because when we're working with more detailed stuff like faces and facial animation, they need a lot more fidelity. Because right now our tech is at a point where we can do things like wrinkle maps, and we can do things like blood flow maps, and we've been able to do those for a while. But now it's really important to push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're working with Snowdrop, which has a lot of support for these specific things, and we're continually working on improving them, we talk a lot with character art as well, or tech art as well, to make sure that we have all that tooling that we need, and that they can create the shaders and all that stuff, and we can apply it to the characters so that it all looks amazing.
Yeah. You actually, we have a little list here of stuff. You did have, like, you mentioned props there real quick, like set pieces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You're involved in that as well.
Yeah, occasionally. Yeah. So I've worked on some set pieces on Division 2. And some smaller things as well. Like, because depending on the production, it's once you're in production, like really in production, mm-hmm. Things can get hectic.
Right.
And it's not always on a specific team or person to fix something, because they might not be able to figure out what's going on. So I mean, I remember working on bugs that I'm like, this is not really my job, but I'm gonna do it because I know how to fix it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of like, that's also kind of useful as well to be able to do and to know, as because I'm part of the tech team, so like I fall under the umbrella of tech, so I'm working under a technical director right now, so he's overseeing all of this stuff. Like, he's overseeing the technical art team, the technical animation team, the technical level design team, and you kind of really need to know the tech to be able to get the most out of it,
right?
So that makes sense.
Well, what kind of tools in general do you use to create these? Like the actual programs?
Sure. So my main software that I use is Autodesk Maya. And within that software, I'm using a lot of different, like Ubisoft specific tools, and some Snowdrop specific tools.
Sure.
So one thing that I didn't really mention, like I was talking about how when we set up a skeleton, we do the weighting and stuff. And as you said, human characters are quite complex. And like I said, tendons, muscles, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we're using a system called Reflex for that, which is basically a system of constraints, which allows us to create like different relationships between different joints to make sure that we can get them to move in a way that can simulate some things. Like, we can simulate muscle deformation, but without actually having muscle deformation, because that's super expensive to use, especially like for games. If you have 10 characters with muscle deformation, like actual muscle deformation on the screen, your game's not going to run that great. But that's one of the tools that we use for that kind of stuff. And it also is integrated in Snowdrop, so it works pretty well for us. And then there's Motion Cloth as well, which I'm working quite a lot with right now. It is basically what the name says it is. It's cloth in motion. So it's a physics-based plugin that we use to simulate cloth, like flags and like clothing, stuff like that. It's a bit more expensive than some things that we've used in the past, like Vertex shaders. I don't know if you've seen or if you've played Modern Warfare, the 2019 game. or Warzone.
No.
Well,
sorry. Because, not my kind of.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I hate it and love it at the same time. Warzone, at least. But they have, and I know my friends were raving about this thing when we first started playing, which is you jump from an airplane and you're standing like at the back of this airplane and the wind is whipping at your clothing.
Yeah.
And you can see like the clothing is like moving and you can like feel and see the wind moving the clothes. And that's basically just a vertex shader.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, this is so cool. I'm just like, yeah, well, I mean, anyone can do this pretty much.
God.
It's just a vertex game shader.
Let this be a lesson again that game development is to ruin games sometimes. Yeah. So you overanalyze what's going
yep.
on.
Yep. But yeah, looks good. So yeah, it looks great. I mean, I'm not gonna harp on it. I'm just like, I know how it's done, so it's less magical to me.
Yeah.
But motion cloth is physics based, so it's a lot more expensive, and we're trying to use it as sparingly as possible. And then we have the Snowdrop tech team, and they basically make tools for basically any studio in Ubisoft that is working with Snowdrop. So they're making very like generic tools that anyone can use. But they also implement some stuff that we ask for specifically for any given project, right?
Right.
And then there's also all the minor things that I make myself just to speed up the process of setting up a character. I think, what was the last thing I did? It was like, it's just a joint placement tool. Like I just get all the, so for some context here, when you create a character, you're creating it with polygons, and each polygon, let's say like a polygon is comprised of different points on a surface, and each of those points is called a vertex, and that vertex has a number. So basically I wrote a tool that can kind of grab all of the vertex numbers, like check all the vertex numbers, and then places a joint in on the specific vertex numbers that I wanted to be on, and that helps me set up a character because I know exactly where all my joints are supposed to be, and then I can copy the skin weighting that I've done on another character over directly.
Like the civil engineering thing came in handy anyway.
I mean, kind of, yeah.
Look at that. But there's more to it. You mentioned Autodesk Maya.
Yeah.
Before, of course.
Yes.
Which is one of those programs that keep popping up for some reason when you do these kinds of shows.
Yeah. So it's a 3D authoring software, pretty much. And we use it for. I use it specifically for rigging and skinning and setting up a skeleton and all that stuff. And because our tools work in that as well. And I think. I'm not really sure about this, but I get the feeling that we're kind of massive. As like one of the few studios at Ubisoft that actually use Maya to the extent that we do.
All right.
Because there's some of the support studios, or not support studios, but other studios at Ubisoft that use 3ds Max instead, which is, it's kind of the same deal. It's also an Autodesk product, which is kind of like they have two competing softwares, I guess. But it's just a preference, right?
Right.
And I think we here at Master prefer Maya,
yeah.
Generally. And then there's also all the other, like, I mean, that's just for us, for my team, because like there's also Blender. I know some of the guys in here use Blender. And like Modo and Houdini and stuff like that. But generally speaking, I'm using Maya and Motion Builder.
Right.
And also Snowdrop, of course, because that's our engine.
Yeah.
And for all my scripts, I use Python.
Yep.
So I do like, I usually write them in the Python or script editor in Maya, because easy access, and that's where I use them. So.
Well, that's a long list in general.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that people use to just pull together. We have that with OCN as well. Yeah. We do that in that program and then that and that and that. And that.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here. God, I can hardly use Photoshop. If you're interested, like as you're noticing, I'm watching the timer on the mixer and it feels like we're only scratching the surface. We could go on. It's a very deep subject in general, from the technical part, of course, to what we talked about at the beginning of creating characters and making sure that the characters move in detailed ways. And I probably like to keep you here for a long time. But if the people that are listening to this and that they're interested in animation and interested in tech animation is just maybe realizing now even that this part of game development exists in a way.
Yeah.
Because in my head, when you start thinking about these things, kind of mix it up with animation in general, that's kind of connected, that there isn't a middleman in the middle that creates all this really complicated technical stuff to even make their work. Yeah. But for the people that becomes interested now, what tips do you have for them? Where should they start? Where can they go from here?
Well, I would recommend looking at DDC talks, and I have a few. Well, I have two in particular that I really really enjoyed watching. Which is I think, let's see, I have it here on the list. It's character rigging and cinematic animation in God of War with Erica Pinto and Axel Grossman. That talk is really, really good. Because they go into like detail on how they create their characters or how they created the characters in God of War.
Right.
And they really get into it. So I recommend that one. Then there's also the talk by Judge Simantov. He was working on Naughty Dog's The Last of Us. That's also really interesting because they're also going into blend shapes and stuff like that, which is something that we haven't touched on right now. But that one's really cool as well. And I just generally, I'd recommend looking into the DDC YouTube animation playlist because there's a lot of cool shit in there. Sorry if I'm...
I think we can say shit.
Yeah.
Looking at the producer, he's nodding. This is a 18 plus podcast now. GDC talks is a gold mine of stuff in general.
Yeah, for sure.
Is there anything else you think, like everyday, like topics I should look into? We talked a lot about anatomy.
If you're looking to get into technical animation, I'd say anatomy is a great place to start, and especially. One thing that I actually didn't bring up before we did this.
We could go on for a long time.
It's a facial. What is it? It's the abbreviation is FACS, facial action coding system, which is it's a system to basically define different movements of the face, and it's. Look into that. That's a very good starting point to understand how facial movement works.
Right. Links and stuff in the show notes as always, so if you want to check these things out. Wow, we've been going on. As I said, we could go on for much longer, but I really want to thank you for taking the time to come here and talk to us about this. It's been really fascinating to find out
thank you.
About your job.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.